Una Noche con Francis, from the soundtrack to the film Round Midnight. Dexter Gordon on tenor sax. Have you seen this 1986 film? It's a very good one. A French filmmaker's tribute to American jazz artists. The director, Bertrand Tavernier. The score, by Herbie Hancock, won an Oscar. Round Midnight is one of the movies you'll find described in Tom Wiener's Guide to Foreign and Independent Films on Video and DVD, the Off Hollywood Film Guide, the definitive guide to independent and foreign films on video and DVD. Movies are our topic in this portion of the show, and I'm pleased to welcome back to the Afternoon Magazine Tom Wiener. Listeners, have you seen any good movies lately on the big screen in movie theaters or at home on video or DVD? Give us a call. Here are the numbers if you want to join this discussion with Tom Wiener. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. WILL. Our guest has been writing about the movies, TV, and popular culture for 25 years. He's a book reviewer for USA Today and the Washington Post Book World. He's written for such publications as American Film Magazine and Satellite Direct, and he's the author of the Book of Video Lists. He's a big fan of independent and foreign movies, and he's the author of the Off Hollywood Film Guide, the definitive guide to independent and foreign films on video and DVD, the guide published by Random House. Again, listeners, we'd love to hear from you this afternoon. Join this discussion, 333-9455 in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. Tom, good afternoon. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back, Celeste.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You know, I haven't seen that film Round Midnight since it came out, and it was just a terrific movie, and immediately I went out and I think I bought a record at that time. I think I bought vinyl.
Yes, I have the vinyl also.
Yeah, but now I've got the CD because it's just such a wonderful, wonderful soundtrack. Are there other foreign or independent films that come to your mind that are great music movies?
Well, you know, one of the things that I do in this book is suggest a double feature movie to go with every film in the book, and it's another film that's in the book, so they're all kind of cross-referenced. The movie that I suggested as a double feature with Round Midnight is a film called Stormy Monday, which doesn't have as much music in it as Round Midnight, but it's a very interesting film about a club owner who's trying in England who's being squeezed out by an American entrepreneur who wants to destroy his club and kind of redevelop the area his club is in, and has some really nice music in it. Sting was involved in the production of the movie, so there's some really nice jazz kind of being played all through the film, but mostly in the background. Round Midnight, the music is more up front. But, you know, when you're talking about great music movies that were made off Hollywood, I think, for some reason, of the Beatles films.
And
Hard Day's Night and Help, which are both listed in here, which are wonderful films. Also a movie I think that a lot of people don't know about, a British film called Absolute Beginners, which was directed by Julian Temple, who did a lot of music videos with Sex Pistols and a lot of the other punk and new wave groups. And he made this really brilliant film about the pop scene in England in the 50s. And has some very interesting actors in it, including David Bowie, who does not sing in the movies. It's a straight part for him. And Ray Davies, who was the, and still is the leader of the Kinks, also in a non-singing role. But there's a lot of great music in it.
That sounds good. I think that, listeners, you should grab a pencil and paper this afternoon. I have a feeling we're going to be hearing a lot of good suggestions for what we might be watching in the next few days at home after work on video or DVD. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Tom Wiener, our guest this afternoon, the author of the Off Hollywood Film Guide. My name is Celeste Quinn. I welcome your telephone calls. Join the discussion, 333-9455, the number in Champaign-Urbana. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. We have a caller waiting to talk with us on line one in Champaign. Hello.
Hi. I hadn't actually planned to talk about movies with music, but there's a wonderful one that I'm sure a lot of people have seen called Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And the soundtrack to that is just fantastic, and it includes the hometown girl, Alison Krauss, of course.
Yeah.
And the topic that I did want to talk about is I wanted to recommend a film that's now playing right here in Champaign at the New Art Theater, and that is Atenarduet, The Fast Runner. Have you seen it?
Yes.
I was just so impressed. I've never seen anything like it.
It's the first film made in the language of the, I believe it's the Inuit people of northern Canada.
That's right.
And it's a quite remarkable movie, if nothing else, because it's the production was filmed under a very extreme circumstances, because
yes,
a lot of it was filmed during the winter up there.
That's right.
And it's kind of a basically simple folk tale of a man who's who loses his love, and then there's all kinds of revenge and family tribal stuff going back and forth. But it's very impressively done, and it's a little. I thought it was a little bit too long. It's a little over 2.5 hours, and I felt like about 15 minutes could have been shaved, and I think it would have had the emotional impact at the end is pretty strong, but I think it would have been even stronger if they had gotten there a little faster.
No, I suppose you're right, but I guess I forgave it because it's sort of on an epic scale, but I think you're right. It's quite long, so I remember, obviously, I ran to the restroom right afterwards, but it was really very...
Well, that should not discourage people from seeing it. You know, great advantages
of video... I guess I should warn them before they go ahead.
Yeah, I think one of the great advantages of video is if you sense that a movie in a theater is too long for whatever...
Mm-hmm.
reason, but
right.
you're interested in seeing it, it really pays to wait
really
for it to
so
come
unusual.
Out on video.
It really is so very unusual. You know, it's about people of whom most of us know very little, although I have spent several years in Japan, and I was surprised to see how much of a resemblance there is between some of the Inuit people and the Japanese. So I guess those people did, thousands of years ago, walk over from Asia. It's obvious, though, when you look them closely. And even a few of the words, again, this could be a coincidence, but a few of the words resemble Japanese very, very closely, I found. But I just found it fascinating, and I hope that some people in this community will give it a chance. I know that now that our multiplexes are offering art films, the poor art theater, I think, has lost a lot of its audience, and it's been here for a number of years, and it's just tried very hard to bring things to Champaign that wouldn't normally come here, so I just wanted to put in a few words for it. But at the multiplexes now, we can see things like, I recently saw The Good Girl, and now... is another film that apparently has gotten very good reviews. I'd like to see called Igby Goes Down, and I'm just so happy to have such a choice now.
Well, that's what my book is about. Uh-huh. I think is the movies that give people a choice, and I think sometimes we feel inundated by all the promotion and publicity that goes into pushing the Hollywood films. Some of which are good. I don't want to condemn Hollywood
films. No, I agree with
wholesale,
you.
But they really do get kind of shoved down your throat sometimes.
Yes, they do. Uh-huh.
And a lot of them are very derivative, and a lot of them are aimed at people who are younger and less sophisticated, and that's fine. But I think that there should be room for movies for adults with a little bit more emphasis on story and character, and a little bit less on special.
Yes, I agree. And also those very unusual ones that we wouldn't normally see. For instance, this one made by the Inuit director, and then this has been several months ago, but A Monsoon Wedding.
One of my favorite movies.
I enjoyed that so much. And
I'm
just so happy to be able to see them here in Champaign. You know, we have to wait a little bit longer sometimes, but they do often come. Well, thanks very much.
Oh, thanks for the call.
Goodbye.
Great comments. The Monsoon Wedding. Is it Monsoon Wedding or The
Monsoon
Wedding?
Monsoon Wedding.
Monsoon Wedding.
And that is available on video.
Yeah. And that takes me back almost to where we started in terms of the music, because I know someone who was really struck by the music in this film.
It's tremendous.
And that soundtrack is available.
Oh, yeah. And I think, you know, a lot of us who aren't very sophisticated, and I include myself in that, about world music, sometimes it takes a movie like Monsoon Wedding to kind of open up your ears to that kind of stuff. And when you see a movie like that that has so much wonderful music in it, and you get out by the soundtrack, all of a sudden you feel a whole new world of music opening to you that you didn't understand or didn't weren't aware of. And Monsoon Wedding's a perfect example of that.
Yeah. I would like to echo the caller's comments, too, for the New Art Theater in downtown Champaign. For many years, they've just brought us fabulous films. The Fast Runner is now playing there. I haven't seen it yet. Been a little busy, but I think it plays through the weekend. So keep our fingers crossed that I'll get out to see it. It's made entirely in Inuktitut, the language of the Inuit. So it's subtitled.
Yeah.
Yeah. Must be. I'm really looking forward to seeing that. Do you think that, let's continue to talk just a little bit more about The Fast Runner here just for a moment. This seems to me to be an unlikely film to be playing in American theaters. Is there any kind of an interesting story in how this film has made it to, a medium-sized market like Champaign-Urbana?
Well, I think that the novelty of it certainly helps a little bit, and that it is a kind of a neighboring country to America. Also, the interest, I think, in general in recent years about Native American culture. A couple of films that I have in the book, Smoke Signals, Powwow Highway, there's a new movie out called Skins. I think there's more interest now in just in general in the stories of these people that haven't been told very much on film. So I think that really helped it a lot. And I think what happened is the people who got a hold of distributing this movie were very sophisticated in how they sold it. They went market to market, opened it at one theater. Obviously, they didn't have a lot of money to make extra prints of the film, but they also screened it very carefully, tried to have advanced screenings so that people who care about movies would see it early and then talk about it to their friends. And the movie would have good word of mouth. And in fact, it played for quite some time here in Washington. It opened in, I think, in August and played right through August and into September and I think into early October. So it was here for quite a while at one of our theaters. The Landmark Theater chain has a new complex up in Bethesda, Maryland.
Mm.
So that, I think all of those things, then that's how these movies get distributed now. They have to, the people who make them and distribute them have to be more sophisticated. They don't have the money and the wherewithal to throw a lot of TV ads and newspaper ads at people to attract their attention.
Yeah, they got to do a really grassroots campaign.
Yeah, yeah. And movies like this are sold by two things, word of mouth and good critics. Critics who are who understand these kinds of movies and would like to promote them, if indeed they are good, will get out there. And people who care about movies generally will read critics for a guide to a film like this. There are plenty of movies out there, Hollywood movies that get released, where the critics might as well not be reviewing the movies, frankly, because mm-hmm. the audience is not interested in what a critic has to say. They've already decided that they're going to see the film, whether it's Spider-Man or The Ring or what have you, because they've been sold on it by the ads that they've seen on television or in the newspaper.
Mm.
Maybe the soundtrack album got released early, so there's some musical elements that have already attracted them. Or maybe it just has a big star that they'll say, I'm going to see that person in anything. And the off-Hollywood films don't have that luxury.
Yeah. So what's the future for film criticism, do you think?
Well, I don't think the future for film criticism is that bleak. I think the thing that film critics worry about is that they feel sometimes like they're kind of beating against the tide when it comes to the Hollywood films, that they can go out and try to be discriminating and say, look, this is good, this is bad, this is ugly, this is, an indifferently made film. And then they see the movie makes $30 or $40 million at the box office and they realize, well, in that case, I guess my opinion doesn't really matter that much to most people. But I think that they do have a great deal of sway over people going to movies like this film and other off-Hollywood films because they're little films and they need nurturing and they also need care and feeding by a critic who's smart enough to recognize a good film when he or she sees one. Mm. So I think that's where film criticism still has some currency in this culture.
Yeah. Off Hollywood Films, our topic this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest is Tom Wiener. He's been writing about the movies, TV, and popular culture for 25 years. He's a book reviewer for USA Today and the Washington Post Book World. He's the author of the Off Hollywood Film Guide, the definitive guide to independent and foreign films on video and DVD. And we're giving away these books this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine as an incentive to get folks to support their public radio station, WILL Urbana. And we began with six, and we have just two books left. So let me give the telephone number to make a pledge of $75 or more. And well, if you're one of the next two callers to call in with that pledge, we'll send you out the Off Hollywood Film Guide. The number to make a pledge, 217-244-9455. That's 217-244-WILL. And speaking of film criticism, Tom, I think that public radio offers its listeners pretty sophisticated film criticism.
I'm not sure if there's a national film critic. I know listening here in the Washington area, we have a local guy, Bob Mondello, mm-hmm. who talks about film from time to time on All Things Considered. So I guess he's probably plugged into the national hookup at that point.
Yeah.
But I would like to see more talk about film on the radio and film criticism on the radio. I think that, especially on National Public Radio, because I think that people who listen to NPR are the kinds of people who are interested in these movies and like a good discussion, a back and forth about films and the issues that they bring up and the topics they address. So.
Yeah. Well, when we've talked with you today and the time before in August, I'm just really struck by the comments of listeners who call in with ideas and say, don't miss this, and, you know, here's a great idea, and this film goes with that film, and, you know, just, you know, it's a great topic. You know, we love the movies. I think public radio listeners love movies as well as good radio.
Yeah. I think there's a democracy about the movies, too. It's not to say that everybody is a film critic, but I think everybody has opinions about movies if you go to movies very much at all. You do feel like it's something, you know, in 2 hours you get this entire story told to you. There's lots of interesting things going on in it, especially if it's a good film. Visuals, there's the sound, there's the music, there's the stars, and then there's all this kind of attendant gossip about how the film didn't get made or almost didn't get made or what have you, that's kind of floating in the air that we're more aware of probably than we need to be sometimes. But at any rate, I think it's an easy topic to talk about. So when I meet people at social occasions, like I was at a wedding this past weekend out of town, and you know, I'd say what I do and talk about this book, and almost everybody I met said, oh, have you seen this movie or that movie? Oh, I really like this film. And I spent about an hour on the night before the wedding talking with the groom, and he was asking me, you know, what about this film? And we were going back and forth, and we were trading, you know, recommendations and everything. It was great.
Yeah. Well, I suppose it's film, movies, are something that we still share as a culture, by and large, whereas television now, there's so many choices.
Yeah.
So many stations, so much cable, that we're not sitting down, you know, collectively and watching the same things.
That's true. If you think about it, the television audience has fragmented a lot more. The network shows that 30 or 40 million people used to watch at a crack have now diminished to, you know, being in the teens and even lower. And so even the most popular shows on television don't have that big following that movies do. And when a movie hits the culture with the force of a hurricane and really starts taking in millions and millions of box office dollars every week and becomes part of the culture. You get to the point sometimes where you go, you know, I've just got to go out and see that for myself. What's the big deal about this movie? So you become more literate in that regard than you do, say, a television program where people will talk about a TV program and say, oh, I don't have the time to watch that, or it's on opposite something I'd rather watch, or I just don't want to watch television that night. So I think in some ways movies are still king of the culture. I mean, they were for a long time, and then television kind of usurped them, but I think it's kind of the pendulum is swinging back a little bit.
Mm. I'm told we have just one of your guides left to give away this afternoon for a pledge of $75 or more, the Off Hollywood Film Guide. If you'd like to grab hold of that book, give them a call in Pledge Central. The Pledge Central number, 217-244-9455. That's 244-WILL. Listeners, I also welcome your calls this afternoon to this discussion. Join us, join the discussion here on Off Hollywood Films, 333-9455, the number to call and ask a question or make a comment. That's 333-WILL, and that's in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, call us toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Tom Wiener is our guest this afternoon. He's been writing about movies, TV, and popular culture for 25 years. He's the author of the Off Hollywood Film Guide, the definitive guide to independent and foreign films on video and DVD. Well, in a lot of households, beginning in around Thanksgiving and stretching into the new year, it's often something that we all do together during the holidays is go to the movies. And Hollywood and others, off-Hollywood folks, are no doubt all geared up, ready to send us a lot of movies. We're about to hit that holiday movie push. Tom, what's coming down the line that you're looking forward to?
I think there are two movies of interest to me, and both of them have the same actor in it, Leonardo DiCaprio. One of them was supposed to be released last year, and that is a movie called Gangs of New York. This is directed by Martin Scorsese, and it's a film project that he has been working on off and on for many, many years. It takes place in 19th century New York just before the Civil War, and it's about Irish gangs in Lower Manhattan. And Leonardo DiCaprio is in it, Cameron Diaz, Daniel Day-Lewis, Jim Broadbent, who's a British actor of note, who just won the Oscar for Iris, and he plays Boss Tweed in the movie. It's a big, huge production, easily the biggest film Scorsese has ever made. He shot it in Europe at an Italian studio where they reconstructed all these sets for New York, and it was supposed to come out last year, but in the wake of 9/11, Miramax, who's releasing the film, thought it would be better for them to wait. And they actually postponed it till the spring or the summer, and then decided to bring it out this fall. The other DiCaprio movie that's coming out at Christmas is a film directed by Steven Spielberg that co-stars Tom Hanks, and DiCaprio plays an imposter con man who's being pursued by Hanks, who plays an FBI agent. Shades of the Fugitive, although in this case DiCaprio really is a bad man, as opposed to the Harrison Ford role in The Fugitive, where he was a wrongly accused man.
Mm. Any interesting foreign films that you're aware of coming out over the
holiday? Well, you know, when you started to talk about the Christmas movies, I thought, oh my God, I'm caught here a little bit unawares. I'm not totally aware of the foreign films that are coming out. I think the biggest stuff that's coming out right now is mostly going to be American and Hollywood productions. The independents are going to kind of pull in their horns around Christmas time, in part because of the competition. It's really, really difficult to launch a foreign film or an independent movie at the end of the year without just getting stomped on by the Hollywood productions. Now, having said that, you could consider The Lord of the Rings, the latest chapter of The Lord of the Rings, a foreign film. In fact, it was filmed in New Zealand, although it's an English-speaking film, but then there are many foreign films that are English-speaking movies. And I was really captivated by the first film in this trilogy. They were all shot kind of end-to-end and by a very, very talented filmmaker, New Zealand filmmaker. And I was very captivated with the first one, and I'm really looking forward to the second one, which is coming out this Christmas, and then the third one is supposed to be released in Christmas of 2003.
Yeah. I enjoyed it, too, but around here at the station, I remember people saying, you know, it got really, people felt very different about it. Some people liked it. Some people hated it. I enjoyed it, and the funny thing was, speaking of Christmas movies, this was a movie that we went to the whole family, you know.
Yeah.
And it was like you take up a row of seats, you know. A lot of fun. And after the movie was all over, some young man, like, I don't know, maybe 9, 10 years old, stood up and said, "When can we see the next one?"
He couldn't wait.
And my mother-in-law said, "Oh, you won't be seeing me in this show next year this time." So,
I hadn't read the books, and I really don't have that much interest in reading the books. It's not a genre of fiction that I care very much about. So I went in a little bit skeptical, but the director, like I say, Peter Jackson is his name. And has done some very interesting films, most notably a film called Heavenly Creatures with Kate Winslet in an early performance about a pair of teenage friends who enter into a kind of a pact of murder, and it's based on a true story. This is a huge canvas for him to be painting. He's never done a movie anything like this before, and I thought he just did a brilliant job of kind of synthesizing all of the various storylines and the special effects and the production values, and got very good performances out of some very good actors, but nevertheless they gave good kind of full body performances in the first one. So I'm looking forward to the second one, but I think it is a little bit of matter of taste whether you want to watch these 2.5 hour fantasy movies.
I would say it is a little on the long side. A movie that's done very well through the summer and into the fall, My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
And I knew that was going to come up.
It's an independent film, right?
Oh, it is. It is. I tell you, I don't want to sound like a sourpuss about My Big Fat Greek Wedding. I don't think it's a terrible movie. I'm not quite sure what the fuss is about it. It's a nice little film. But we were talking before about Monsoon Wedding, and anybody who's seen both of those movies can, I think, honestly have to say that Monsoon Wedding is so much the better film, so much more sophisticated and so much more interesting. My Big Fat Greek Wedding is a sweet little movie about a very stereotypical Greek family and this kind of ugly duckling daughter who finds a very, very attractive young man to marry, and of course he's not Greek, so there's all these jokes about his family being these very uptight WASPs, Midwestern WASPs, and so forth. So the movie kind of trades in on stereotypes, and I found some of it kind of funny and some of it borderline almost insulting, but in terms of the stereotypes. But it's a nice film. I guess if I hadn't seen it in the same year as a really brilliant film like Monsoon Wedding about the same subject, I'd probably be a little bit more generous to it.
Mm. When will we see Monsoon Wedding on video and DVD?
It is out.
It is out already?
Yeah. I just checked just before we went on the air to make sure. I wasn't sure if it had been released, but it is available on VHS and DVD. So I would, anybody who's listening and has seen My Big Fat Greek Wedding and thinks it's a pretty good movie, I would urge you to check out Monsoon Wedding. Now, of course, it's subtitled, and you know, it's the plot of it's pretty complicated. There are a lot of different stories going on. You may find it a little bit hard to follow at first, but I think if you're patient with it, you'll be very, very much rewarded. It's a very funny movie, and it has some very, very serious stuff in it too. It's a great combination.
And what would that go well with?
Monsoon Wedding.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Another good movie about weddings, although it was actually a Hollywood film, was a movie that Robert Altman made in the late 70s called A Wedding, which takes place in the Midwest in a wealthy suburb, I believe, of Chicago. And it just captures the great texture of any wedding experience you've ever been really involved in, where you sense there's all kinds of subplots floating around. There are people who haven't seen each other in years. There are people who are meeting for the first time and are feeling kind of flirtatious or ornery or whatever. And Altman is the master, Gosford Park being, you know, his latest film along these lines. He's the master at manipulating large cast of people into multi-layered stories, that he manages to juggle the balls on all these stories and never drops them. And A Wedding is, I think, kind of an underrated film of his, and it's very, very good.
That sounds good. I think an Altman fest would be a good thing to do over a weekend at home.
There's a lot of good Altman movies.
Yeah.
There are a few clinkers in there, but he's made a lot of good films, and, you know, his breakthrough film, I think, is still one of his best, and that was M.A.S.H. You know, wonderful movie. McCabe and Mrs. Miller, which is a really kind of underrated little scene western that he did a couple of years after that with Warren Beatty and Julie Christie. It was really terrific. And I could just go on and on. Altman is one of my favorite directors, and I think he's really kind of changed the way people look at movies. I think before M.A.S.H., a lot of people didn't understand that comedy could have a lot of sophistication among kind of, you know, down and dirty humor. I mean, a lot of the humor in M.A.S.H. is not that far off from things like Jackass, but Altman does it with a certain kind of sophistication and style, and really pulls it off.
Mm. You know, that reminds me, when you talk about, you know, something that can be so dark and yet so very funny. Britain's Ealing Studios. I have not seen these movies.
Yeah.
But you're off Hollywood Film Guide going through here. It's so much fun to read. The Lady Killers. Essential.
Yeah.
Essential, you say.
Yes. And in fact, as I understand it, I believe The Lady Killers is being remade. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Tom Hanks is going to be in it, which is very interesting. I'm not sure who he's going to play. But it's a really funny little dark comedy about a gang of thieves led by Alec Guinness and Peter Sellers, both in their prime when this film came out. And they're hiding out in a rooming house run by a little old lady who they realize has discovered their true identities, and they decide that they're going to have to bump her off. But of course, as in any great black comedy, the tables are turned and the unexpected happens. And not to give too much away, but it is really a delightful film.
Mm. The Lady Killers, 1955, British comedy.
Yeah.
Alexander McKendrick, the
yes.
director.
Yes. Yes, a really terrific British director. And some of the other Ealing comedies, The Lavender Hill Mob is another film that was a similar kind of film about a gang of thieves trying to pull off a heist, and Alec Guinness was in that film.
Mm-hmm.
That's a terrific film. And Kind Hearts and Coronets, which is another Ealing film that Guinness played seven roles in.
Wow.
And it was about a young man who was eighth in line to inherit a fortune, and he realizes the only way he's going to get his hands on the money is to murder seven of his relatives, and Guinness played all seven of the relatives that were the victims of this murder. Again, a black comedy, but just terrifically done.
In your review here, you say this before the term black comedy was coined, Kind Hearts and Coronets was tickling audiences with its audacious story of a man who lays waste to an entire family in order to come into a title he believes rightfully belongs to him. So we have a comic killing spree.
there aren't very many films you can say that of, and it works. I mean, you know, we're living here in Washington right now, and we're under a lot of stress and strain because of what's going on. But it's a brilliant filmmaker who can turn that kind of a situation into a comic material. I think of what the Coen brothers did with Fargo a couple of years ago when they won the Oscar for the screenplay for that film. It's just fantastically, if you describe that movie just kind of in stark terms to someone, they'd say, well, there's nothing funny about that. But it's the genius of filmmakers like the Coen brothers who can find kind of the dark humor in something like kidnapping and murder. So, you know, when you see a film like that, it really kind of sticks out for you.
Let's talk with a caller, a listener in Champaign, line one. Go ahead.
Hello. I know you're talking about videos, and I do see videos. I do like them. But there are so many films that are so much better on the big screen, and I really think we're blessed here in Champaign because Roger Ebert comes with his Overlook Movie Festival, and that's at the Virginia Theater, so we get to see some, again, on the big screen. And the Virginia Theater itself, the Park District, puts on films that, that are, older and are enjoyable. And then I also, we're putting in, and the Art Theater, of course, but I just wanted to put another plug in for the Country Fair Movie Theater, which has movies that have gone through the regular theaters, and you can pick up before they leave town, and you can still see them on a big screen without the having to see them on a small screen with video. But then I have a small TV, so I need to get a new TV. But I just wanted to mention those things, the joy of seeing something on a big screen.
I think there are certain movies which are almost criminal if you have to watch them on a small screen. One of the films I have listed in this book, and one of my very favorite movies, is Lawrence of Arabia, which I've seen four or five times in a theater, and I've never been able to watch it on television. It's just a magnificent-looking film, and even with a fairly big-sized television set, you just don't get the impact. But, if that's the only way you can see a film, the advantage now that you have of DVDs is that they present the picture much more sharply. They also, if it's a widescreen film, show it in the letterboxed format. So you do get a better chance at the theatrical experience, but when you see it on a huge screen with that sound pouring out of the speakers around you, it really, really takes your breath away.
Yeah, Lawrence of Arabia, that would be a great film to have at the Virginia.
Yeah,
that big screen.
You've got a big screen theater there.
That's the big screen.
It was re-released about 7 or 8 years ago. There was a restoration done on it because the prints of it had fallen into very bad disrepair. And some restoration experts were able to re-piece it together, and they made new prints of it and released it around the country to some of the bigger cities. And it played here in Washington for about 2 months. My wife and I went to see it twice at the Uptown Theater on Connecticut Avenue here in Washington, which is the biggest screen theater in town. And it was just a wonderful experience to see that kind of a movie.
Bet you can feel the sand and the heat and
you really do. It's amazing how you start taking off your sweater, by halfway through that film.
Well, we've got to wrap it up here. I hope we'll do this again, Tom. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you, Celeste, and thanks for having my book as a premium. I really appreciate it.
You're more than welcome. Tom Wiener has been our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. He's the author of the Off Hollywood Film Guide, the definitive guide to independent and foreign films on video and DVD.